Hello and welcome to the Witness podcast from the BBC World Service with me, Alex Last. And today we go back to 1977 when Ethiopia's military regime was carrying out a brutal campaign of murder and repression. It called the Red Terror. I've been speaking to a woman who was imprisoned and tortured by the regime. Listeners may find parts of this program distressing.
They killed so many young people. It could be anybody. Our friends were being taken. You were saying, when would my turn be? And it was escalating. It was devastating. It was mind-blowing. It was unbelievable. Unless you're there to see it. You were there to see it.
One night in 1977, Ethiopian security in Addis Ababa came to arrest a young woman with an unusual first name. She's called Original Weldegergis, and she was 24 years old. And she would be one more victim of Ethiopia's military regime, the Derg, and its campaign of violence it called the Red Terror.
I was at home with very wicked headache when plainclothes people, they came to me. And I just went out with a very, very tiny nightdress. And barefoot, I want to be dressed. And he said, no, your mother should go in and bring your clothes. My mother was so surprised and frightened. She just brought something to put on my shoulders, nothing else. So I went. I was really half-naked when I was taken. And the people from my surrounding really followed the car until it reached the main street. They were crying. And they took me to the office of the Derg, the old Menelik Palace. So when I went there, there was a commander who gave me to an investigator. And he said, go and tear her apart.
Just a few years earlier, in the early 1970s, Ethiopia had been on the verge of revolution. And the student movement in Addis Ababa University was in the vanguard, calling for change, an end to the country's centuries-old feudal system, an end to crushing poverty, and an end to the autocratic rule of Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie. Original Weldegergis was among their number.
So you can't imagine how active we were. You can't imagine how energetic we were, how we thought that the world is in our hands. It was a very, very... Even today, I still remember the way we've been shouting, going in the street, being beaten by the police. We didn't care. So it was a very heady feeling.
In 1974, Haile Selassie was overthrown. But instead of democracy, in his place came a military council called the Derg. The Derg adopted communist ideology. It spoke of revolution, of Marx and Lenin, one-party rule. The Soviet Union became its ally. But for many, simply replacing the emperor with another brand of authoritarian rule was not the revolution they had fought for. Resistance grew, and Original joined a popular underground organization, the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Party, the EPRP. It too preached Marx and Lenin, but it wanted to end military rule.
We believe that Derg should vacate the government and that there will be a government of the people, for the people, where people will have their own opinion. Everybody will be equal. Every wealth in the country will be divided equally. All religions will be equal. It sounds naive today, but it is not that we thought it was possible, and we're working towards that.
By 1976, the confrontation between the military regime and its opponents was escalating. The EPRP assassinated some prominent members of the regime, but the regime also began a wave of killings and arrests on a vast scale. Across the country, squads affiliated to the regime were given permission to hunt down and kill so-called counter-revolutionaries, particularly suspected members of the EPRP. In a homage to Soviet history, the regime, led by Colonel Mengistu, chose to call this campaign the Red Terror.
They have got this village level, we call them Abiyot Tabaka. They are the revolutionary guards. They have the power to kill, so they kill you. They know you. You live there, so they know you. They can come anytime and kill you. And then there are all types of this, the military apparatus and equipment. They kill more. And there was Nezar Mija. Nezar Mija literally means free action, meaning that Derg cadres would just go out on the street, they see a youth, they shoot and kill him. And they killed so many young people. It could be anybody. They don't ask, they don't inquire, they just shoot in every part of the country.
And the Derg regime wanted to show its work. The corpses of its victims would be dumped on the streets, as the BBC reported at the time.
In the last few weeks, people who've been coming to work in Addis after the dawn curfew's been lifted have often had to bypass bodies which are displayed at prominent street corners. The victims have always been shot in the back of the head, and they usually bear a notice pinned to their chests saying that they were enemies of the revolution. Nobody knows the exact number of people who've died in this so-called Red Terror, but the essence of revolutionary justice, apparently, is that it's quick.
They used to throw the bodies on the streets. On the streets. That is not only it. They used to ask for the price of the bullet for the people they have killed. That is real. The shocking part is after you paid, they never give you the body. No mother whose son or daughter was killed during the Red Terror has a body to bury. They didn't. They took them, they mass buried them, they throw them on the street. You can't touch them.
Anyone could be a suspect, killed, arrested or tortured. And in this climate of fear, many were denounced, innocent or not. When they came for Original, they took her to one of the interrogation centres in the capital, Addis Ababa, a place with a brutal reputation, and there her ordeal began.
And so the investigator took me to a place where there was a big room with a cement floor. I could hear a boy groaning. I think he was being tortured. Before they put a cloth on my face, the investigator just pushed me from behind so that I fell flat on my face. And then he beat me with a whip. I kept quiet and said, oh, this lady needs something else.
Original, still wearing just her nightie, was trussed up and hung upside down from a horizontal pole under her knees. Then the beatings and torture began again. Here, she describes the brutality she experienced.
Imagine me, half-dressed, being swung like that. And they beat me for hours. I can't imagine how to describe that torture. They beat you and beat you and beat you on your soles so that the insides of your feet is like raw meat. And unfortunately for me, they tore my toes. The marks of the torture are still there. After 2 hours, he let me down and took me to his office. I couldn't walk. He just pulled me and put him in the office. Somebody wearing white came along and said, who have you slapped inside there? Why? He said, the corridor is full of blood. He said, please call somebody, have the corridor cleaned and do something about this blood. The two things I most remember of this torture is that you get very, very cold. You shiver. I don't know why. And then you are very, very thirsty. For my shivering, the guard was kind enough to say, there was a man who was killed yesterday. He has some clothes, so you'd better put it on. So there were blood on the clothes, but I was really thankful and I wrapped it around myself.
That wasn't the end of the torture, but Original considers herself one of the luckier ones. She was not killed. She was transferred to one of the overcrowded prisons in Addis Ababa. But among it all, the brutality of the regime could still shock, as she saw when one torture victim was brought to her jail.
One of the things I can't forget was they tortured a young man whose stomach was ripped apart. He was alive. I could see the inside of his body. They didn't know what to do. So they asked the women if there was some milk they could give him. So when they put the milk at his mouth, it went down his throat and came outside I cannot get rid of that picture, the milk coming outside of his body, and his eyes, his face looks okay. He looked up at us. He couldn't speak. And he died that night.
To keep their spirits up, the inmates would tell each other stories and talk of revolution in far-off lands.
You can't imagine how many stories I told to the kids. Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, and the Count of Monte Cristo, when we're telling fictions. Otherwise, you talk about July 26th revolution, and we talk about the Ambianfu, we talk about the Long March. Depends on the audience. Sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't. And we go around the world through the stories.
Many did not survive long in the prisons. Names would be called, people summoned out of cells, and it was soon clear to all that many were being taken away and executed.
I never forget their names. I never forget the way they looked when they go out. Even after so many years, I can't talk about it without emotion. And there were others who were summoned after 5 p.m. We knew they were not coming. But when they walked out of the compound, they walked as if a prize were being put on them. They walked so tall and proud. When the summons comes after 5 p.m., you knew they're not coming. And so many people passed through my eyes to be killed.
It's not clear how many were killed during the Red Terror across Ethiopia. Estimates range from 100,000 to 500,000. After the fall of the Derg in 1991, some leaders of the regime were put on trial for crimes against humanity, but for some, the full extent of the terror has yet to be addressed. Reginald Weldegergis returned to study law at Addis Ababa University and is now a leading lawyer in Ethiopia, focusing on women's rights. She says she has forgiven those responsible for her treatment, but the scars of the Red Terror are still felt across Ethiopia.
In my family, in my neighborhood, in the friends of my sisters, in the friends of my brothers, in my classmates in high school, in the university, and the people I met in prison. So many were taken away and executed. There is a void. The wounds are still there. There are still families and people suffering, and the gap of the generation is enormous.
Original Weldegergis, ending this edition of The Witness podcast with me, Alex Last. And if you like The Witness podcast, do have a look at another World Service podcast called The Documentary. Amazing stories on lots of subjects. Definitely worth a listen. That's all from me for now. Until the next time, thanks for listening. Goodbye.